Hi, everyone, and welcome to the College Transitions podcast series, where a few times each month we answer your college-related questions. Our aim with this series is to help you successfully navigate the world of college admissions while discerning fact from fiction. I'm your host, Michael Trivett, one of the co-founders of College Transitions, and this week's podcast covers the test optional movement and why we're seeing a number of institutions move to either test optional or test flexible admission policies. We also chat about how students can take advantage of applying to test optional colleges and what they should be aware of as they approach the application process. I'm joined by our CEO, Andrew Belasco, here in the studio. And first off, Andrew, can you explain to our listeners what a test optional school is?
Sure. Colleges adopting test optional policies do not require standardized tests in their admissions process, meaning that applicants do not have to submit results from their ACT or their SAT and will not incur a penalty or be at a disadvantage for choosing to withhold their test scores.
It seems like, you know, test optional is one of these policies that has really exploded in the last several years, particularly among smaller schools.
Yeah, it definitely has exploded. About 50 of the nation's most selective liberal arts colleges have adopted test optional policies, as have about a dozen of the most selective universities. Places like Bowdoin, Wesleyan, Brandeis, George Washington all have test optional policies. So if you're a relatively high achieving student with relatively low test scores, there are still plenty of options out there for you. If you want a list of all selective test optional institutions, I do believe we published a list that's on our Dataverse page. So just visit our homepage and click on the Dataverse icon for that information.
Okay, can you talk a bit about why we're seeing so many colleges using this practice in their admissions offices?
Well, schools cite a number of reasons as to why they adopt these policies. For example, many colleges talk about a desire to improve diversity and to encourage applications for more underrepresented students, who typically and on average don't perform as well on these exams, given their biases. But schools may also adopt these policies for strategic reasons, for example, to affect a rise in the number of applications they receive and also to discourage low-scoring yet otherwise qualified applicants from submitting their test scores. Because if you remove test scores from this population, your average standardized test score, that score you report to US News and other ranking systems, is likely to rise, and your rankings may rise as a result. So in addition to altruistic motivations, there are also a number of strategic or institution-serving motives at play as well.
And you performed a study last year speaking to this, right?
Yeah, a couple colleagues and I published a paper examining whether test optional policies, particularly at liberal arts colleges, really improved economic and racial diversity at adopting institutions on average. And we discovered that these policies did not have a significantly positive effect in the way of improving diversity. However, they did improve the perceived selectivity of these institutions because they led to a rise in applications at many adopting institutions, and they also inflated a school's average standardized test score for the reasons that I mentioned previously. So there are definitely strategic reasons for adopting these policies, but that doesn't mean that colleges don't have students in mind when they go test optional. Diversity aside, many schools believe that SAT or ACT scores do not adequately predict students' performance in college, so they've really decided to move away from tests and toward other measures or indicators of college success.
And what are those indicators specifically that you're speaking about?
Yeah, well, regardless of the reasons for going test optional, schools that do go test optional are likely to adopt a more holistic approach to evaluating applicants, meaning that they'll look more closely at a student's transcript, in particular his or her course selection, academic performance, and also grade trends. So do the student's grades improve rather than become worse over the course of his or her high school career? Test optional schools are also more likely to scrutinize letters of recommendation, an applicant's extracurricular file. So what activities did they pursue? How much time was devoted to each activity? Did they assume a leadership role? And do they happen to earn awards or recognition that might distinguish them from the applicant pool? And finally, test optional schools are also more likely to assess how an applicant's background and interests align with the needs and goals of their institution. So what does the student want to study? What activities would they like to pursue in college? How can they contribute to the academic and extracurricular life of the campus? And equally important, do they really want to come here? Do they really want to attend our institution? So students who choose to go the test optional route have to make sure that their essays and other items within their applications effectively articulate why they're a good fit for their prospective institutions.
So students going the test optional route still need to have a hook. They still need to have other strengths within their application that make them desirable.
Exactly. The students who benefit from test optional policies are not those who have low test scores and low grades or low test scores and a less than impressive resume. There needs to be something compelling within your application that colleges can point to and say, yes, this student's a good fit. This student's a good bet to succeed, even though we don't have access to his or her test score. So, you know, the student who withholds their test scores and is still admitted into Bowdoin or Bates or Bryn Mawr is not your run-of-the-mill student. They still excel inside and outside the classroom, relatively speaking.
Okay, you said relatively speaking. What do you mean by that?
Yes, relatives is an important term here. So when deciding whether to submit test scores, you need to look at your performance relative to others who are previously admitted. Do your test scores fall above or below those of the average incoming student? Does your GPA or class rank fall above or below that of the average incoming student? Is there something about your profile that is likely to distinguish you from other applicants to that institution? Generally speaking, if your scores are on the low end and fall outside that middle range, yet your grades and or extracurricular accomplishments are relatively impressive, consider going test optional.
So aside from grades, test scores, and activities, are there other things that a student should evaluate or consider before taking the test optional route?
Yes, a big one is financial aid. There are a number of test optional institutions that still award scholarships on the basis of standardized test performance. Dickinson College, Furman University, American University are just a few of the many test optional schools that still consider test performance when doling out money. So students need to pay attention to this factor when deciding whether to go test optional, especially students who have significant cost concerns. It's also why we encourage all of our students to spend significant time and effort preparing for standardized exams, because if they don't, they could be leaving a lot of money on the table at the end of the day.
That's great. So is there anything else that our students and parents should know about test optional policies and the test optional movement in general?
Well, I don't think the movement is slowing down anytime soon. I would definitely expect to see more moderately selective liberal arts colleges and universities adopting these policies. But I wouldn't expect the same from elite institutions for the simple fact that they don't need to go test optional. Remember, that motivations for adopting these policies are often implemented to attract more applicants or gain a more competitive edge in the rankings game. But elite institutions are already at the top of this game and already attract applications from the best students in the world. So the incentive to do away with test scores is just not there. I mean, why would you stop requiring something which, although perfect, is still relatively useful and which can still be used to distinguish comparable applicants? Now, what I can see happening is more elite institutions adopting test flexible policies.
And what are test flexible policies?
Well, test flexible schools still require students to submit standardized test scores, but applicants have a much broader range of tests from which to choose. For example, instead of submitting an SAT or ACT result, students can submit scores from subject tests or AP exams. So there's a little more flexibility, hence the name test flexible. And it's not uncommon, at least in our line of work, to come across high-achieving students who would benefit from having this option. There are many students here at College Transitions, for example, who knock it out of the park on their AP tests, for example, but don't do as well as expected on their SAT or ACT. And these kids would do well at just about any elite college, so it would be nice, at least in my opinion, if more of these ultra-selective schools provided multiple ways of meeting these test requirements.
And I believe we have a list of test flexible institutions on the DataVerse page on the website. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It is included there.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to the College Transitions podcast. And remember to check back every 2 weeks for additional segments highlighting important topics in the world of college admissions. For all of us at College Transitions, thanks for listening.